Got a bad feeling about this. What is this place? Everyone gets scared, kid. Without fear, you can't have courage.
Hi, I'm Ken Pringle, and welcome to another episode of We Talk Funny. And right there, you just heard the voice of Jake Green, who is starring as Poe Dameron in the new LEGO Star Wars Halloween special, Terrifying Tales, premiering this Friday, October 1st, on Disney+. We're going to talk with Jake about Star Wars and voiceover and, well, honestly, quite a bit of nonsense because we're both the fathers of three-year-old toddlers, so we are definitely operating on too little sleep. But before we do that, I want to talk about today's breakfast cereal. I am enjoying a bowl of Cinnamon Toast Crunch. This is a staple in my house, and yes, I could throw out trivia like I normally do and talk about how it's been around since 1984 and how I wish they would get rid of the Crazy Squares mascot and go back to the original Chef Wendell. Heck, I'm old enough to remember when it was three chefs. Yes, I remember his sidekicks Bob and Quello. I'm nerdy like that. But I am mentioning Cinnamon Toast Crunch because of one very specific reason. General Mills is doing a promotion right now. You might find it in your stores, where in some of the large boxes of their cereal, they brought back toys! There's figures in the boxes designed around their different cereal mascots in Halloween costumes, and there's even Chase figures. One in every 50 boxes will have a Frankenberry figure in it. That's right, they've combined the Chase elements of Pokemon with the sugar of awesome breakfast cereal. I just want to take a moment to say, bravo, General Mills! Way to go, way to take a stand, even though you probably didn't know you were taking one, but that's how I'm interpreting it. Bring back toys in breakfast cereal. My three-year-old deserves a race car or a whistle or an action figure that he will get to play with when his dad is done with it first. Bravo, General Mills, bravo. So go out, grab a bowl of General Mills breakfast cereal, or whatever your favorite breakfast treat is. Sit back, relax, because it's Saturday morning, time for a new We Talk Funny, and as we always say here on the show, spoons up, let's dig in. Welcome to We Talk Funny, and with us today, you have heard this gentleman in shows like Boss Baby Back in Business. He is in the new Animaniacs, and he is the voice of Poe Dameron in the new LEGO Star Wars Terrifying Tales special coming out this Friday, October 1st on Disney+. Please welcome Mr. Jake Green.
Yay! Hi, everybody. Yay. Hi. Oh, that was nice. So,
right. It's like there's a studio audience in my head.
He runs this session. He provides the sound effects.
His craft services is amazing.
Okay, well, now I just want crafty.
You're in the new Animaniacs. I love that, by the way.
It's so good.
Oh, it's so good. I had to tell Rob Paulson I was so excited because my kid, we were just talking before we started recording. We both got 3.5-year-olds, and my kid only watches the same shows over and over and over and over and over.
Uh-huh. Like, yeah.
I've seen the movie Sing 1,000 times.
Hey, like, good movie.
The same stuff he's watched over and over. But I was like, I want to watch the new Animaniacs. And so I put on the first episode, and I'm sitting there watching it, and suddenly I look over, my 3.5-year-old is laughing his ass off.
Dude, same here.
I wanted to cry. It was the best moment.
Honestly, same here. So we were watching the first episode, and he's watching, he's like engrossed, and this kid like only watches Frozen and Moana. And when I say that, I mean like certain parts of them over
Frozen
and
two,
over and over
so
again.
Many times.
I just cracked him on Frozen 2. He was like, "What, regular Frozen?" And I'm like, it's the same but different. Let it happen.
See, my kid watched Frozen 2 first, and so Frozen is like the prequel for him or something.
Yeah, he like Tarantino'd himself on that.
Oh, yeah, basically.
Interesting.
Basically, yeah.
To Animaniacs, so I was playing the pilot, and he's like enjoying it, and he's, but then it got to Pinky in the Brain. Dude, he starts losing it, and then he goes Pinky, and at that point I was like, okay, any sort of like like everything has been healed inside of me. Do you know what I mean? Like that just
it was so great because I enjoyed that show so much, you know, when I was younger.
Same.
And yeah. I immediately texted Rob and I was like, oh my God, my kid's watching Animaniacs. He seems to think Tress McNeil's funnier than you, but it's really good.
That's hilarious. They did give Dot a lot of good stuff in the new series. No, like a lot. Like even in the pilot, they got right to the whole like addressing the past of like, you know.
I love the moment so much when in the first scene where you get to watch Rob and Jess Harnell do impressions of each other.
So
where it's Yakko doing Wacko's voice and Wacko doing Yakko's. I was like, that is hysterical.
Yeah,
that was so funny.
It's
and I gotta say, Jess does a pretty good Yakko. It wasn't.
I know, right? I know. And it's so because the show has always been self, you know, referential and obviously topical. And so now just having this second life, there's so much more to pull on, not only in the current events, but also just on itself, just commentary and also getting rid of stuff like No More Hello Nurse and Dot even talking about it. You know what I mean?
That,
like,
that had to go.
Yeah, no, that had to go. There's certain things we can't do anymore for good reason. Should not have been done in the first place. You know?
But they still managed to be so edgy.
Exactly.
In a safe way. The whole episode about buns, about how, you know, everyone has the right to bear buns.
Yep.
So dude, good.
And here's what's awesome is that, I mean, the writing is so good. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, once I was old enough to really kind of dissect shows, at the time when I was a kid, I was like, that's just funny. I like it. But older, I was like, man, knowing how long animation takes, were they able to remain so topical?
Yeah.
Do you know how many re-records we do? Because they're rewrites. Like we get a majority of the episode, you know, and then we get the whole episode and then we'll have like multiple pickup sessions where like, we're going to put in this joke instead because this just happened. I'm like, that is awesome. It is dedication. They're like constantly refining and making it the best possible version of itself. You know?
Yeah. And they even referred to that in the episode where they referred about the fact that the record was being done in 2018 and they're like, what's happened since then?
Exactly.
Like there was a Pinky and the Brain sketch where they were like, they made a dead mouse joke and they're like, this would have been a perfect place for a dead mouse joke if we hadn't used it in the last episode.
I love that breaking the fourth wall stuff. And like, entirely possible that the reason that I love that is because I grew up with Animaniacs where they broke the fourth wall.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep,
it's very totally much chicken or the egg, man. Snake eating its own tail. Animaniacs watching Animaniacs, dude.
And so now you're a part of it. You get to be a part of that universe, which is awesome.
Blew my ever loving mind. So that show, like obviously I grew up with like Looney Tunes and Saturday morning cartoons, Hanna-Barbera, all that stuff. It's like really what got me into animation. I mean, I was just like sucked into cartoons from the get-go. But Animaniacs, for a very specific reason, is the show that made me realize that being a voice actor was an attainable goal.
Yeah.
Because when I was a kid, I also played hockey like pretty seriously. It was like, you know, I'm gonna be in the NHL. Wrong. But my dad took me to an all-star game when I was a kid, an NHL all-star game, and they had a celebrity all-star mashup like skills competition.
Right.
And so there was like Dave Coulier was on there. And for anybody who's younger than me, Uncle Joey from Full House, who that probably still doesn't mean anything to
well, Fuller House now.
Fuller House. There you go.
Fuller House.
Got it. You know, did someone sell world? You know, Uncle Joey. And we just lost a bunch of your listeners like still don't get it, dude. But then they were like, and now introducing the voice of Yakko Warner, Rob Paulsen. And I was like, what? I remember where I was sitting in the arena. He steps on the ice, he gets on the mic, and then Yakko's voice comes out of this human man's face. And in that moment, like literally it was like everything just kind of splintered, like in the like Black Mirror,
you
know, and that the title card comes up. I was like, I could see the Matrix. And from that point forward, I was like, yeah, no, I want to do that. And then when I booked Animaniacs and got to like record with Rob, I was like, I told him that story and he was like, I got to say, I think I told him that story. I might've blacked out. I don't know. But I was like, you're the reason. It was because of you. I thank you. And I think I started by saying, You correct me if I'm totally made this up, but you played in an NHL Celebrity All-Star Skills Competition circa whatever year? And he was like, oh my God, yeah, I did. Wow. Like, hadn't remembered it. I was like, no big deal. Kind of just like a defining moment in my childhood. and it was, he's super nice. He's such a, as you know, he's such a nice, warm guy. And he was like, I got to say, I've heard a lot of stories. He's like, I've never heard that one before. I was like, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. He's like, oh, you need to stop crying. We're recording.
They're getting all of this.
They're getting all. Yeah. They're like, and great for take two. Do you want to read the script? I was like, yeah, sorry. So that's all a long story of
that's
saying,
amazing.
That, yeah, it's very full circle for me. And I'm going to leave the business now. I'm going to quit.
So as a kid, like, what was the Saturday morning cartoon? Like, what were you, the wake up early kid? Were you the, you know, just whatever happened to be on? Or
I was the wake up early kid because of just rampant ADHD. And it was only recently when I was lamenting about my own 3.5-year-old waking up early that my parents were like, oh, yeah, why do you think we put you in front of Saturday morning cartoons? It was so that we could keep sleeping. I was like, oh, well, that worked out well for me. Thanks. Yeah. God, if I had to remember, I mean, it was like, it was everything. It was mostly Hanna-Barbera, I think, was what dominated Saturday morning cartoons, if I'm not mistaken.
Sure.
Like, you know, Flintstones, Jetsons, all the classic stuff. Yogi, right? Yogi.
Yeah.
And
then did you have a favorite?
Oh, Snagglepuss.
Like, right.
I love
right.
Snagglepuss.
Did you have a favorite, like, did you have a traditional Saturday morning breakfast cereal that you would sit down with, like the big old bowl of the sugary cereal and whatnot?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Honey Nut Cheerios or Frosted Flakes. And here's what you got to do with Frosted Flakes if you're a disgusting child. You got to put in the milk, let it get nice and soggy.
Yeah.
You got to eat that. You got to eat that sloggy Frosted Flakes mush at the bottom. Now that sounds disgusting to me, but as a kid, it was just sugary goodness.
Oh, it was so good. So good. Yeah. No. That's
how about you?
Amazing.
What was your go-to?
Oh, geez. Well, as a kid, it was probably like Fruity Pebbles. I really loved Fruity Pebbles. Mm-hmm. That was a good one. Captain Crunch, Apple Jacks.
Man, I forgot about Apple Jacks.
Yeah, so. Yeah. But now I was actually just talking to Wally Wingert about this on another, just after recording another podcast episode.
Are you seeing other people, Ken?
I'm so sorry. I like my podcasts like an ice cream cone. It's just open on my end.
I had to think about it. I did. I had to visualize it.
It takes a second.
I like it.
But I was telling him that the one that people have slept on is a chocolate Frosted Flakes.
What?
Oh, those are amazing.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Best chocolate cereal I've ever had. They are so good.
Do they still make it or have they out?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're available right now. Yeah. I just bought them yesterday. They're incredible.
Do you know what I did?
Totally got
it. You know what I did to excuse myself? I bought like an organic cereal that is like their version of Frosted Flakes.
Oh,
it's fine. You know what the problem is?
Not enough processing.
Not enough processing. That's exactly the problem. I'm like, this tastes like food.
This tastes like somebody made this by hand.
That's
no.
not supposed to be. No, no. I should wonder if I'm eating microplastics.
Of course. Of course. That's what's going to preserve me well into the next century.
True. And also just real quick, just got to give some honorable mentions. Okay. Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Yep.
Kix. Got to give it up for my Lucky Charms. Okay. Nice. And big shout out to Rice Krispies. Doesn't get enough credit. Big ups to
Rice Krispies. And just plain old Rice Krispies. It's
just plain Rice Krispies.
Plain ones. They're great.
Plain ones, totally fine. Totally
Love
fine.
Them. Love them. Love them.
Never big on the Count Chocula. Okay. That's fine.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Never really
taking a radical stance on the edge.
Yeah, I know.
Here.
You know what? Okay. Not a lot of people are brave enough to say it, but I'm going to put myself out there and say, Count Chocula, you can go F yourself.
Wow. Wow. This is going to start some shit right here.
Yeah, Put it in the comments, people. Okay. Count Chocula, your time's up.
You're trying to build a fan base here, Jake. No one's going to hire you after this. You're toxic. You're cereal toxic.
You know what? Sometimes you just kind of gotta be true to yourself. You gotta speak to cereal toxic. It took me a second. It got in there. Hi, Jake Green, cereal toxic.
So what's it like being a dad now and being able to do the Saturday morning thing?
It's awesome.
Like, have you had the experience of your kids watching something that you voiced?
They don't care. No,
not at all.
No, I tried showing
Same
them
problem.
The
yeah.
yeah. I tried showing them the Lego Star Wars holiday special.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't care. My buddy's friend ate it up. ate it up. I'm getting videos. I'm getting texts. Look how much he loves the show. I'm like, this means nothing to me. Like, no, it's great. I say that facetiously.
Yeah. I tried to do that with my kid. I was like, look, this is dad. That's daddy's voice. And he's like, this isn't little baby bomb. I don't care. Like, this.
Yeah, no, they don't. They only like what they like, you know, and that's great. And it's so funny because, like, I remember we've seen countless interviews, right, on talk shows where, you know, that question is asked. And
yeah,
like, my kid is not impressed by me at all. I'm like, well, that's just because you don't do cartoons, man. And now I'm like, no, my kid's not impressed by me at all.
No, not at all. If I was in something animated where I'm singing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, maybe it'd be different. But I mean, with a plot,
reality, Ken.
That's true. That's true. I need to go talk to the little baby bum people.
Listen, it's going to be super easy. Just teach yourself animation. Make a show. Pitch it to a network. Get it picked up. And the whole show is just Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star.
I don't know why more people don't do this. It seems so incredibly simple.
I mean, I think I should get a little bit of a cut on the back end because that was my idea.
You really should. You really should. Now, obviously you had your breakthrough moment there with the with Rob Paulsen, but how did you actually get started? Like, did you start – because you've done comedy. You've done, you know, on-camera work. You've done a bunch of different stuff. What was your path in?
My path in was acting, straight acting. You know, I think as a lot of kids do, the first theater I ever did was musical theater. And got the bug from there. And, for me, it was a mix of not only the just inundating myself with cartoons, but also just being exposed to Jim Carrey and The Mask, where I was like, oh, I want to do both of those things. I want to do cartoons and on camera, live action and theater. So, what I did was I studied. I took like drama classes in middle school and all that, and started working commercially when I was I think like 11 or something like that. I grew up in the Bay Area, so I started working in like San Francisco doing commercials, and I started taking voiceover classes at VoiceCaster, not the VoiceCaster,
not the one in LA. Burbank.
No, not the one in Burbank, but yeah. VoiceCaster in San Francisco. Where I, Samantha Paris, wow, that name came flooding back. Big up. Hey, Samantha Paris, if you're listening to this, I studied with her.
It worked.
Yeah, right. It did. And just kind of got the basic building blocks of acting behind a microphone. Right.
Yeah.
And then when I went to college, I studied, acting in college. I studied theater where they did not let you audition professionally. It's like, we want you to focus on the craft. I'm like, shouldn't we be working though also? No, you need to rehearse for all of your life to put on a show that will only be seen by your classmates and maybe even not them. Okay, but then when I get out of the real world, how do I audition? We don't know. We've also been in this bubble for 25 years. Oh. Okay.
I did the same thing, American Academy of Dramatic Arts. And my roommate at the time, like, he'd stopped acting. He had a successful acting career in television. Like, he was like the hot boyfriend in a bunch of different sitcoms. And I'm like, you're here now? And he's like, but I've got to hone my craft. And it's like, or you could continue to make money with your
craft. Right. I know. It's a very fine line. Like, for me personally, I'm glad I did it because I always had a proclivity to comedy, and like that was all I was doing, really. Like, you know, comedic.
You did a lot of that, yeah.
I did a lot of that after school in New York, right? But I wanted to, knowing what I wanted to do in life was literally every aspect of the business that I could. Mm-hmm. I was like, I want to get my chops. You know, I want to be able to say that I am a legit. Like, I can do drama as well as I can do comedy. You know, so the theater that I studied was classical acting. You know, we did trained in Boston, trained in London, like literally put in the steps for it, and moved to New York after that, and was like, at that point I was like, oh right, now I can do voiceover again. Right. And I got lucky. A friend of my older brother's had been doing it for probably 15 years, and she made an intro to her agent in New York, and they liked me, and I started working with them. And at the same time, was just doing stand-up and improv and sketch in the city in New York, and some regional theater when they allowed me to do that, the people who have hiring power, that is. And at the time in New York, it was pretty much all commercial and promo, like not really animation. It hadn't yet, like the jobs hadn't started getting really sent to like New York talent yet. I think maybe technology wasn't there or something, because I'm 98 years old. And my then girlfriend, now wife, got a job out in LA. And so we moved out here, and that's when it all kind of opened up for animation and video games.
Nice. Everything. Nice. That's awesome. And then, yeah, you were doing improv and stand up and all of that, which, you were on the live We Talk Funny show.
Dude, such a great show that you run, by the way.
Thank you.
Ran pre-pandemic and will run again.
Yes. Once the world stops burning, show will come back.
Exactly.
But in the meantime, we have the podcast. So speaking of comedy, what you've done so many different things. What would you say is the funniest role you've played?
I don't think that's up to me. wow.
Let's change the question a little bit. Which role have you had the most fun playing?
Most fun playing. So, you know, there it's interesting. I get something different out of every role. They all like offer different stuff, you know? I mean, the first one that comes to mind is how much fun we have had with Poe in the Lego Star Wars stuff, because we've taken this like awesome performance that Oscar Isaac has done and created, this character he's created, and then kind of put a little twist on it, a little spin, and like expose some more of like Poe's kind of like quirks and insecurities. You know what I mean? So that's just been fun in terms of like taking this awesome character and running with it a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And hopefully doing service to what Oscar Isaac did, but also making it its own new thing in the Lego Star Wars universe, you know?
Sure.
In the world. So that was fun. But then I also quote unquote have fun doing like super serious stuff. Like that's really sad, you know, but it's because that just scratches a different itch, you know?
Right. Right.
But yeah, I try to have fun in everything I do. And I think something that crystallized that for me was the great Charlie Adler, who another like monolith of my childhood.
Oh,
right?
Sure.
Charlie loves to say, if you're not having fun in the booth, get the F out of there. You know what I mean? It's like, then why are you doing this? And also I cleaned up that entire phrase.
It's not just the F part.
It's not just the F part. You know, I had to really.
There were swears that you'd never heard of.
I really had to sanitize that. love Charlie. But like, don't think I can repeat a lot of this stuff. But that's the basic thing, right? It's like, what got us into this in the first place? It was like to play and have fun and like, you know, create. And so if you're not doing that in every moment, then what's the point? It shouldn't feel like work. It should feel like fun.
Well, I always felt like that was sort of a big difference between on camera and being in the booth is I feel like the people that gravitate towards one versus the other, there's a lot more fun in the booth where it's like, it's not about the fame. It's not about, is this a stepping stone to the next thing? Like, it's just, I think Rob Paulsen actually put it best where he said, it's, you know, when you don't get a role, it's like there's a party that all your friends got invited to and you didn't get invited, where it's not, oh, I didn't get that role and that was going to be a great career move. It's like, I want to go play with my friends.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It feels like play. It feels like a sandbox, you know?
Yeah.
Because we get to do these amazing, incredible, imaginative, inventive things that just don't exist in live action, you know?
Sure.
It's a totally different animal, but. I mean, I could go into like the psychoanalysis of why I think that like the on camera aspect tends to affect people's egos differently than the voiceover thing.
Yeah.
But I'm not qualified to say anything like that, so I won't even hint at it. But no, I think that there's a different breed of actor, generally speaking, in the voiceover community, where it's just like, we're here to have fun. We're here to play. We're here to, you know, hang out and not be in direct. I've recommended friends for roles. You know, that competition's not there as rife as it is in live action, I believe.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's very different. It's not, the cutthroat thing's not there.
It's just,
you want to see a good product come out. And you know, if you know somebody that's going to be a better fit for that product, you want to help because there's more coming down the road. It'll be fine.
Exactly. And you know, I've heard over the years stories of like, and I'm sure you have as well, of even in commercial, on camera commercial stuff, anything that's live action, you hear actors being like, yeah, and I see the same people, you know, my type at every audition. I'm like, yeah. And when that happens to me at voiceovers, I'm like, seeing my friends and it's cool. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not a, is this guy going to get my job? It's like, hey man, how you been?
Yeah. Yeah, so, absolutely. I should take a moment to say that this does not mean that I don't want to work on camera.
No, it's
keep hiring
great.
For things. My commercial agent will kill me if he thinks that I'm putting out the wrong message.
No, my point is, I think that tends to be it's a prevalent line of thinking that I've seen over the years that tends to present itself more in the live action world than it does in voiceover.
Absolutely, Yeah. Now, going back to when you first started, what was your very first recording experience like?
Oh, wow. Well, for commercials, it was a Snickers demo. Don't want to brag or anything.
Wow.
Yep. I did a thing that nobody heard. that was the first one. It was cool. I was super excited. You know, knew from experience not to touch the microphone because that's not your job. If you need it adjusted, yeah, ask. I remember like actively telling myself, don't touch the microphone. Don't touch the microphone. Touch the mic stand, not the microphone. But my first...
And now we own the microphones. I can touch it
whenever I want. My first video game session, I will never forget. That was, believe it or not, Red Dead Redemption 2.
You were one of the 3,000 actors who was part of the populace.
3,500 and 52. So I did other games after that came out before that because so much work went into making that game.
Yeah.
But that was the first game that I booked when I first moved out to LA. And things have changed now because of the contracts where now we have more transparency in terms of what the game is, what the role, well, sometimes not what
still
the game
not
is.
Enough.
At least like kind of the tone of the game and if there are adult themes and so on and so forth. This was when that had not yet happened and we were given generic sides. It was just a monologue and you were to do it in a Southern accent. I did that. I get to the job. I have no idea what the game is. I have no idea. Well, I take it back. I knew that it was by Rockstar and I knew that it was Southern accent. So I was like, it's Red Dead Redemption 2. But I didn't know what the role was going to be.
Yeah.
And I get into the booth and I got the facial kit. Whoops, sorry. Speaking of, this is why we don't touch our mics. I'm like,
it's your microphone, man. Do what you want.
It is my mic. That's true. Yeah. Anyways, I get into the booth. There's a pickup for you. Edit. I get into the booth. I have the, you know, facial capture stuff on and everything. And I'm like, cool. So what are we doing? They're like, so you're a KKK member. I was like, I'm sorry, what? They're like, well, it's not the KKK. I was like, okay, great. They're like, because we can't say KKK, but you're a Klan member. I was like, that's not any better.
Oh, I'm a Klan member who doesn't admit to it. Great.
Yeah. It's just a different Klan that wears hoods. Got it. I'm not okay with this, he said to himself in his head, not wanting to lose the job. And then they very quickly were like, but don't worry. It's an initiation ceremony where you go to light the cross and you light yourself on fire.
Nice.
I was like, oh. Cool. So I'm killing a Klan member that is myself. Let's do it. I don't condone murder. Jake Green does not condone murder. I condone totally getting rid of Count Chocula, not murder.
Well, technically, that's accidental suicide. So
that is exactly.
That's fine. You know, do what you got to do.
Self-immolation?
Self-immolation. That sounds like a thing. Hey.
All right. Hey.
Oh, thanks, Bill Nye. Good job.
I went to college. and so. Yeah, that was my first job ever. I remember thinking, oh God, I'm gonna be a Klan member. This is not good. But
this is the one they're gonna remember me for.
Joke's on you, bro.
I'm gonna be going to cons with a banner behind my head. Meet Jake Green, and it's just a big picture of a Klan member.
Oh, not good.
Please put that character on all. You need the 8x10s of that character.
Yes. Yeah, you're right, Ken.
Don't mention it. Just wait to see if somebody notices.
Very specific cons that guy gets invited to.
Oh, man, that's crazy. But yeah, you're right. With the video games, you oftentimes just don't really know what you're getting into. I mean, because they all operate under like code names and they'll have like Project Meadowlark and it'll be something that, you know, does not fit that at all.
At all.
You know, I just auditioned for a video game last night that literally the name of the project was just a letter and a number. And that's all it is.
Exactly what you're thinking, yep. what you're talking about. Yeah. And you're it releases what
yeah, you know,
exactly.
What it was. I just found out last night when I was looking at your IMDb page, apparently you and I were in a video game together.
Oh no, wait, what game did we do?
Yeah, it was the mobile role-playing game that came out last year, the big one, Exos Heroes.
Oh yeah. That was a fun game.
Yeah, you were the mouse character, Nero.
Yeah, the little mouse guy. Mouse
musketeer guy. I was the young, nervous leader of the thief group.
Oh my God, awesome,
yellow
dude.
Yellow hood bandits. Yeah, that was me. Yeah. So. Nice. Yeah. Did not know we were in.
Yeah, I didn't.
Air 5. There we go.
Isn't that the crazy thing? Yeah, Air 5 via computer. isn't that the crazy thing about our industry? It's like you could be in multiple projects with the same person and never know it.
I've got one that I cannot talk about right now because I'm still under the NDA on it.
Why not, Ken? What is it? Say what it is, Ken. What is it?
But they were like, oh, yeah, we've got some great actors coming in on this. You're actually going to be working with an Academy Award winning actor. And I'm like, great. Can you tell me who? No.
I'm like, and also you're not going to be in the same room with him. So
yes, okay. I'm going to watch for that.
That's amazing though.
Like, I mean, I'm still going to completely lie and say that I worked with him and or her.
Yeah. And you helped them.
I was recording from a home
character. You ran lines with them, even though that's not a thing that we do.
I have dinner with their family now. It's fantastic.
Because they just won't leave you alone. It's like, oh God, it's like,
they let me keep the Oscar for a few days, you know, just so
honestly,
that I can, you know,
that was nice. That was nice of them.
They were really good people.
Yeah. I mean, they owed you at that point.
He and or her good people.
Yeah. Yeah. They, but just the general they.
Oh man! So when you get into the booth, what would you say? Because I know every voice actor I know has stories like this. What is the weirdest direction that you've gotten?
The weirdest direction I've gotten.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be something in the booth. It could be like in the copy or something too. But
right. I'll tell you my favorite direction.
Okay.
That I get. I love when a director gives nonverbal direction, when it's like a facial expression or a physical movement, and I'm just like, got it, awesome. Like literally one of my favorite directions ever was from Kal-El.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah He goes, okay, so I want you to start here, and he kind of lifts his head up a little bit, and then end here, and he just dropped his brow down a little bit, and I was like, got it, let's do this.
thank god for the glass
exactly. Literally, just start here. And I was like, that was gold. Glorious. So like, that's kind of unorthodox, but brilliant at the same time, you know?
That's hilarious. And then in that same vein, what would you say is the oddest audition that you've had to do? What's the weirdest thing you've seen come up?
I like weird stuff, man.
Oh, weird stuff's great. It's so much fun.
I love weird stuff. I love when I have to spit blood or be you know, like, any sort of like creature-y stuff like
so
that.
You're a talking block of cheese, but don't make it sound cheesy.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. I love the contradictory stuff, right? That's the best. It's like robot, but human.
Yeah.
Got it. So just good AI. Got it.
You're using all of this copy that no one would ever actually say in real life, but make it sound relatable and real.
Yeah, exactly. I love that stuff in commercial copy, especially where they're like non-announcery, conversational, friend next door. And then it's like, act now and you can get the brand new coming to you stores now for free, but for money also. And you're like, okay. That's a challenge.
I feel so bad for the actor out there who like grew up trying to be like an announcer. Like he was like, I'm going to be the next Gary Owens. And it's like every piece of copy now is like, no announcers.
No announcers. We hate announcers. We don't want announcers. Announcers bankrupted our family and killed our dog. You get those announcers out of here. And then, the role is listed as announcer.
Oh yeah, that looks to be the title of the character in the copy.
Yeah, title of the copy is like announcer.
Announcer. Yeah, I love it when you see something like that where they're like, we want this to be real, relatable, you know. And then when you actually hear the spot come out, it's nothing like any of the direction that was in the copy. If they've gone a completely different direction with it, it'll be super announcery.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's, you know. That's also a part of, I mean, I don't know, who knows how that happens, but just the creative process of collaboration where things change as you go and they morph and they become what they're going to become. But you're right. It is so funny when they end up in a completely different place than you initially thought that they would.
Now, with that in mind, what do you think are some of the biggest mistakes that actors make when they're approaching a role, when they're looking at copy, when they're looking at the direction?
Trying to be something, I think, is a pitfall. Trying to sound a certain way, I think, is a pitfall because, you know, as I know you've heard, and I'm sure a lot of people have, like, voice acting is acting. You know, the right. acting comes first. So who are you talking to? What do you want? You yeah. know, what are you trying to do? Not what do you want to sound like? Now, don't get me wrong. If it's one of the awesome, increasingly rare cases where you are provided with character artwork, that can help inform maybe like the vocal placement if we're talking about animation or video games,
right.
something like that. Or even, you know, the animation style can help inform the tone if it's going to be cartoony or more grounded and realistic. But other than that, the first thing that should happen is the acting, and the character comes from that. Character is grown out of intention, not the other way around.
Right, right. Yeah, it's not a caricature. It's not you sitting there exactly. going, oh, this guy's going to sound like what I heard over here, so let me just mimic that. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Now, I think that a fun way into creating unique characters is to kind of do mashups of two different inspirations. You know, like that's fun way to be like, you know, you can something I like to do is think about, okay, who do I know in my life, or who have I seen like in just, you know, in my life of different, you know, different media that kind of has echoes of this type of character, and then kind of throw those in a pot and stir it up, you know, see kind of what comes out. But other than that, trying to sound like something,
yeah.
I think is a pitfall.
Yeah, that's good advice. And then
off your cans. Don't listen to yourself when you audition and when you record.
Oh, man, it's been so long to figure that out because, you know, I was like, oh, I've got to hear what I sound like. But no, you act
better
without cans on.
That's not your job.
You have to get used to wearing your cans for when you're in the booth.
True.
So you can get the booth directions.
I do the one ear on, one ear off.
Yeah, not a bad way to go. Not a bad way to go at all. And then how important do you think it is for actors to learn more skills outside of voice acting, whether it's stand-up or improv or, you know, having more arrows in their quiver like that?
I mean, I think it's extremely important to do as much as you can that you're interested in. And that doesn't even have to do with the craft, just in life in general. You know, we draw on our experiences. So live your life. Oh, do other things than act. you know,
it's true. I mean, there's been times where, you know, I might get a job because I had a great conversation about retro video games or comic books.
Exactly. Exactly.
And you're connecting on a personal level.
Yeah, personal. It could be connecting with the other creatives. It could be something as simple as drawing on a past experience. Like I booked a commercial because the image that I had in my head was a time that I went camping with friends recently, where it's just like, that's kind of what I was drawing on when talking about this commercial copy, right?
Yeah.
So if you're not doing other stuff, you have a limited scope of experiences from which to draw upon, you know?
Right.
So,
right.
But, you know, in terms of improv, I think everybody, you know, back to the craft side of it, I think improv's extremely important if this is something that you want to do, you know? It's not something to always be employed. But I think not only is it you spoke of like arrow in the quiver, not only is it a great option to have, but I think it also kind of trains your brain to coming up with ideas that you might not otherwise have right off the bat.
Yeah.
And it's just good in life because you can talk to people. If, you know, I remember when I first started at UCB, there were a lot of people that would take the classes that weren't actors, but just wanted to get better at public speaking or getting along with their coworkers. And it is that back and forth.
Yeah, absolutely. And talking about like improv and stand up and all these different forms of comedy and stuff like that, you know, you see a lot of that come out. In fact, who would you say is the funniest voice actor that you've worked with? You know,
Wow. It's Ken Pringle.
Who would you? What stood out about them? Who stands out as the guy that really is a blast to be in the booth with? If you get to do a group read, of course, or is a blast to talk in the waiting room with?
No, I mean, God, it's so hard to choose. I mean, I've had amazing. I've been fortunate enough to record with some truly like amazing heavy hitters like Kevin Michael Richardson, Rob Paulson, and Maurice LaMarche,
yep.
And obviously Jess and Tress, but like, God, it's so Carlos Alazraki.
Love Carlos.
Is brilliant. Yeah. And his stand-up is so funny too. He's such a good comic. Yeah, I mean, I will say that the most out-of-body experience that I had was recording with Rob and Mo on Animaniacs, where in between takes was some of the funniest stuff I'd heard. They've known each other for decades. Yeah,
they're best friends. They've known each other.
The back and forth was just hilarious. And then like Mo just looking over at me and doing Orson Welles just broke me as a person. Did you know that they made that happen in Animaniacs because Mo on his own was just doing Orson Welles in between takes? We're putting it in the show
Frozen
now.
Frozen Peas, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Frozen
Peas. He's done it for years. It's hysterical. It's so much fun.
Those are some of my favorites. And then obviously, I mean, they pale in comparison to you, Ken.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, that's definitely not.
That's classic.
Definitely
Ken.
Not prompted
that's
at
hilarious.
All. I'm just going to cut that chunk out and add it in after any time I say something that remotely resembles a joke.
Perfect. Oh, boy. I peed myself.
That's my new ringtone there.
Sorry, you didn't let me finish. I peed myself before we started.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to cut that part out.
I've been sitting in pee.
My wife's going to hear that every time my iPhone goes off now.
One time. That I peed myself or the laughter?
You know what? I might mix it up. I'm going to put the peed myself thing on her iPhone.
That's weird, but hey, man, everybody's relationship's different. You do you.
Now, have you done a lot of group sessions? I mean, because a lot of nowadays, they're so rare.
Yeah, not recently.
Yeah,
I think that they started going by the wayside not too long ago. Like solo records, I feel like were more and more common. But like Boss Baby, every session except for pickups was a group record.
Nice.
Oh, Jesus Christ, D. Bradley Baker. Oh my God, I left him out of the question of funniest people. Man, we did Kipo together, and like being in the room with that guy, hilarious. First of all, just incredible. Incredible watching him work.
Insanely talented individual.
Yeah, and then like doing these crazy creature sounds and then just being like, anyways, what are we doing next? I'm like, you are amazing.
Yeah, if you hear him talk about like how he does it, it's like he's naming science. Body parts that don't exist.
It's science. He's actually doing, he's talking about physiology. Yeah. But anyways, so group records in the pandemic, there have been some on Zoom. Mm-hmm. It's not the same, but it's nice, you know? But man, those are the best when you get to get in a room with your friends and just like play around and
you get to enjoy the party. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Exactly.
Of course. Exactly. Now, how about you've done a lot of different stuff from animation to video games to commercials. I mean, you were the Snickers guy
I didn't want to have to say it, but yeah,
never went anywhere, but yeah,
he knows that Snickers demo.
How do you feel like, how do the reads differ based on the medium?
That's a good question. And I don't know the answer. Moving on. No, it's, you know, it's, that's part of the job is knowing the tone. And thankfully, a lot of that's given, I think, in terms of just the audition stage, it's given in the directions. Mm-hmm. But research goes into it. You know, for instance, it doesn't even matter if it's a commercial or animation or video game. I try my best to find existing stuff that's been done for that product by that producer in that show, because you got to fit in the world. And that goes for live action as well. If they're, you know, it's a little harder if it's a brand new show, but for something that's already existing, you got the internet, you can find it online. You can watch 10 minutes of an episode and kind of see what it's all about. And at that point, it is just a matter of letting that kind of soak in and putting yourself in that world. That's where the imagination comes into play.
Yeah.
So you got to be malleable. You got to be a sponge. You got to be a malleable sponge. Hi, Jake Green, malleable sponge, anti-Count Chocula.
Cereal toxic. So now I want to move into the Star Wars stuff a bit, you know, playing the role of Poe Dameron. What are the challenges when you have to do a voice match on a character versus just coming up with, you know, your own thing?
Yeah, so you kind of got to find lightning in a bottle is a phrase that confused me when I first heard it. And then, actually had to think about it and it made sense. So you have these constraints, you got a lane technically in which you have to stay just in terms of the placement, the vocal placement, the certain character choices that have been made, that have been set up for you. But then at the same time, you have to embody that character and not just do an imitation.
Right.
So the, just for me personally, the first thing I do try to hit is the tone, the vocal tone. It's funny. We talked about not listening to yourself. Voice match is a, it's a very different animal.
Sure.
That is very important. You got to sound like the person. But from there, you really do have to like slip into that character's skin. And with all the knowledge that you have through your research, hopefully, of watching or listening to as much as you can that's been done as that character, or even as that person, if they're just being themselves, you have to then trust that that's there and make your choices off of that, if that makes sense.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, and oftentimes, you know, that's helped by the writing, because the writer has taken that into consideration. They've written things that person would say, and in, you know, response to things that that character...
I'm not going to write the character on a completely different voice.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. So that's helpful. And just, you've got to drill it. You just got to drill it until it lives in there. It's kind of, it is a muscle memory thing. You know, I'm also a former athlete. I used to play hockey, and it's something that kind of lent itself into my acting process was the discipline of training, of if you put in the hours leading up to the game, when you're in the game, you don't have to think about it. Your body just does it naturally, right? And I think the same goes for voice matches in particular, where you just, at a certain point, you know where the placement is, and you can just...
So you're not just jumping into a booth and boom, you're hitting it. You're sitting there, you know, rehearsing this kind of like training yourself to recognize the things that stand out and, you know, different elements and different voices and how to replicate those.
Yeah. Even certain phrases, just like playing it over and over again and recording myself hitting that phrase until I feel like it matches, and then getting the whole sentence, and then oftentimes going, not listening to it and just doing it. Wild, just doing it, you know.
Well, I think that's a really important thing to point out there, because you talk about, you know, repeating a phrase and getting it to sound the same, but then pulling something out of that, because you do get a lot of you know, amateurs that think that it's an impressionist. You know, they can talk like SpongeBob. No, you can say a line that SpongeBob said that sounds like SpongeBob, but can you then take the elements from that and put it into your own performance?
As Bob Bergen says, can you read the phone book like Porky Pig? You know,
yeah, so, very different.
Yeah. So it's, and you know, and the reason that I say repeating that phrase over is that oftentimes, like 9 times out of 9 in a voice match audition, they give you reference audio that you have to match. And then, and then oftentimes also they'll give you an extra script with no reference that you have to do as that character. Right. So for that reference material that you have to, that's the part where it's like, yeah, you know, you got to hit that. That's like watching backup dancers. If one of them is totally out of step, you're going to notice, because everybody else is doing it, you know, together. So, that is it. It's that you have to sound like them, but you also have to fill out the acting. You know, Sarah Sherman, who
phenomenal casting director,
incredible, and dialogue voice director as well. She did Looney Tunes cartoons, right? And I remember her saying, like, during the audition process, like, she took to Twitter to be like, "It's not just about the voice; it's about the acting." You know, and Eric Bauza, who fucking love that dude.
Man, that guy's incredible. Yeah.
Incredible. But prime example, he's not just great guy. He's not just doing an impression of Bugs Bunny. He's Bugs Bunny, man. He's Daffy. He's Marvin the Martian. He is Tweety. He embodies those characters. You know, it's there's a reason that Tom Kenny is still SpongeBob. You know, it's like he is SpongeBob. So it's not just, they're not just gonna be like, okay, now we're just gonna find somebody that can sound like SpongeBob. Sorry, Tom, you're too expensive. No, he's like brilliant and is able to crush it.
Yeah, the technical aspect of it, I'm sure I'll have him on the podcast at some point. But if you go and listen to James Arnold Taylor talk about doing the voice for Fred Flintstone, he's not just pulling out the elements that make Fred Flintstone. He's pulling out the elements based on which actor before him was playing Fred, and saying, here's the difference in their performances and which actor am I trying to emulate, and what am I pulling out and making it my own? I mean, it's incredibly technical.
I had to do that with Morbius for Marvel's Ultimate Avengers video game.
Yeah,
where I'm like, there have been so many Morbii, I'm gonna say Morbi Eye is the plural.
Yep.
Nick Jameson was on the
original Spider-Man animated series, and he was Morbius on there. He did talk funny, but his performance was completely different than Morbius in the video games.
And so you want to do service to those performances that came before you, but unless they're asking for, as you know, we've been talking about voice matches, unless they're asking for that, you do have to come up with your own thing.
Sure.
You gotta, you know, breathe life into this character. And so it's this balancing act of paying homage to what's come before, but also making it your own.
Right.
And right. James is brilliant at that.
Oh, so good. Absolutely incredible.
Like he did on your show when he runs through, he has that whole bit of like
similar voices. All this here.
Oh my God. Insane. Brilliant.
Yeah. And he's just showing you how he'll tweak a voice and make a change to it. And suddenly it becomes a different character.
It's like watching a surgeon do surgery too fast.
Yeah.
That's what it's like. I'm like, stop it. Stop it. You're going to hurt yourself. Stop it.
Oh, something's getting sewed in there that shouldn't be in there.
Yeah, but then it's not. Then he's like, look, no sponges. I'm like, that's amazing.
Now, so if going back to the Star Wars stuff, were you a big Star Wars fan before booking Poe Dameron for the first time?
Oh, yeah. No, when that booking came in, that was to be a part of the Star Wars universe is just. That was everything to me. You know, it's like that's bucket list for sure. And with a character that I love so much, like Poe jumps off the screen. Oscar Isaac's performance is amazing in all of those films.
Sure.
So to get to do that was just, it was such an honor and responsibility. Not going to lie. I don't know if you know this about Star Wars fans. They like Star Wars and they're pretty serious about it. So, it was a little bit of pressure there, but at the same time, I like challenges and I like, I hope that that's reflected in my performance. I hope I do justice to not only the franchise, but to, you know, Oscar Isaac's performance as well.
Well, I like hearing that you like challenges because something that I like to do on every episode of the podcast is I always like to play games with my guests.
Saw?
Oh, it is. It is. Yes. It's exactly like Saw. You're now stuck in your voiceover booth.
Oh, Jesus.
And
okay, what do I have to cut off first?
We're going to play a little game here. You up for a game? Let's do this.
Let's do it.
Let's play a little game. We are going to play Jedi Holocron. Because that's what I'm calling this trivia competition. I'm going to see just how much Star Wars you know, because I'm a diehard Star Wars fan.
Oh, you're going to win this.
I'm going to put you on the spot here and possibly ruin your career. So this will be most likely fun.
Yeah.
Let's see here.
You know what I'm going to do instead of answering the questions is make a random sound effect so that you have to move on. I'm not dying on this hill.
All right, here we go. Question number one. You also played Poe Dameron in the Lego Star Wars Holiday Special. In the original 1978 Star Wars Holiday Special, what was the name of the Wookiee child that was the main character? Was it A, Kashyyyk, B, Chewchaka, C, Lumpy, D, Furball?
That's good.
Oh, we're smart. Oh man, putting you on the spot right here.
Okay, okay, okay. Give me those options one more time.
Okay, okay. It's the Wookiee child.
Yeah,
who's celebrating Life Day. It's the center of the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Sure is.
Is his name A, Kashyyyk, B, Chewchaka, C, Lumpy, D, Furball?
I'm gonna go with Kashyyyk.
Oh man!
No! Kashyyyk is the planet. Kashyyyk is the planet. Okay,
I'm gonna give you a little mulligan on this one because that special is terrible. His name was Lumpy.
Lumpy.
So his name was Lumpy. Lumpy.
Wait, was that one of the options?
It was one of the options. C was Lumpy.
That
was his actual the character's name. It was on CBS. It was done by a production company outside of Lucas. Lucas had very little to do with it.
I think they got driven out of the business.
It was rough. It was rough. Mm-hmm. All right, question number two. We're gonna turn this around. You'll get this one here.
Yep, got it. Coming.
During the filming of the original Star Wars trilogy, which of the main actors refused to sign a 3-picture deal? Was it A, Mark Hamill, B, Harrison Ford, C, Carrie Fisher, or D, the guy who played Greedo?
Harrison Ford.
Yes, it was Harrison Ford. In fact, that's actually why Han Solo was frozen in carbonite at the end of Empire, because they didn't know if he was going to return for Jedi.
Yep, that was a good optional out. God, I wish it was. Greedo, I really wanted to be Greedo
right away.
Hey, can I tell you something real quick?
Yeah, yeah.
I play Greedo in the holiday special too.
You do? You do?
When they threw me that one, I was like, yes.
And of course,
shot Solo?
You shot first, right?
Absolutely, Solo.
All right. Question number three. What kind of business did Luke's Uncle Owen run? Was it A, a cantina, B, a droid repair shop, C, a moisture farm, D, a child labor camp?
Oh, it's so good. Dad brain again. A was, say it again.
A cantina.
Yeah.
B, a droid repair shop. C, a moisture farm. D, a child labor camp.
Yeah, I think it was a moisture farm.
It was a moisture farm. That's why he wanted 3PO. Yeah. He needed somebody who could speak to moisture evaporators.
Yes, that's right.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, this one, now we're going to get a little tougher, because I've been easy on you here so far.
Those are the softballs.
Question number four. In Return of the Jedi, who or what provides the vocal sounds for the Rancor? You remember the Rancor underneath Jabba the Hutt's palace, tries to kill Luke?
Yep.
Was the sound of the Rancor provided by A, Frank Welker, B, Lions on the Serengeti, C, Anthony Daniels, D, a really angry dachshund?
I think I remember. I think it was Lions.
No, it was actually a really angry dachshund. They remixed the sound of a little dog.
Wait, really? That's hilarious.
It was the sound of Lions on the Serengeti fighting a really angry dachshund.
Angry dachshund. The dachshund won. I knew it was an animal. I knew they recorded an animal.
All right, question
five. It was
actually
Frank Welker fighting the dachshund, but that's fine.
There you go. There you go. It's Frank Welker with a dachshund inside a trash can. Oh, well, you know, that's how he did the Lion King. The Lion King was him doing lion roars into a metal trash can to get to get the sound so big.
See, I laughed along.
There's
the
actually
trash
a video.
Can
I think it's on, like, I think it's on Disney Plus, where you can see the behind the scenes of that. It's amazing.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, Frank is just crazy. All right. So question five: what actor was originally signed to be the voice of General Grievous in Revenge of the Sith, but backed out due to a union dispute? Was it A, Gary Oldman?
I just
want to
say Ed Asner right off the back, but sorry, go ahead.
Obi-Wan, you're finally here.
God. Oh, the world I wish I lived in. Oh, can you imagine?
I've been waiting for Mary and Anakin for years. Okay. That is all I'm ever going to hear when I watch that movie now.
Oh, that's so good.
Okay. Was it A, Gary Oldman, B, Idris Elba, C, Patrick Stewart, D, Jerry Lewis?
Gary
nice
Oldman.
Jedi! Hey, lady!
It was Gary Oldman. Yay! Yes, it was a union dispute.
What's
some of the actors were non-union.
Jedi
and refused
Blavins
to work with.
Sorry, I stepped on what you were saying with my
question
Gary
six.
Lewis impression.
No, I loved it. It was fantastic. Surely you'll book that somewhere someday.
How dare you?
Question six: what species is the Tatooine junk dealer Watto? Is Watto A, Bothan, B, Trandoshan, C, Toydarian, or D, Merchandisian?
Definitely D. No, I'm going to go with A, Bothian.
Oh, no. Many Bothans died to bring us the plans from the Death Star.
Do you want to know why I didn't get that one?
I'm a Toydarian. Jedi mind tricks don't work on me. Only money.
There it is. There it is. That's right. Yeah, I didn't get it because I didn't know it.
Yeah, it's Toydarian.
Toydarian.
Just a few more here. All right, here we go.
I'm a Toydarian.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, of course, right, when you say it makes sense, Ken. Couldn't I have gotten that as a hint?
If I just said the answer as a hint.
Can I get a hint? I'm a Toydarian. I'm going to go with Toydarian.
Question 7. What is the command code that allows Senator Palpatine to secretly activate the clone troopers to kill the Jedi? Is it 69. A, execute?
Up top. Any kids listen to this?
Is it A, execute order 66, B, execute order 99, C, execute order TK421, D, execute order with medium fries and a Coke?
Because I know this one, like I know my own children, I'm going to go with B, execute order 99.
How? I believed you. I bought it. Execute order 66.
I've never met my children.
Okay, question 8. In Rogue One, what is the Empire removing from the holy city on Jeddah?
Who says that Rogue One is not a good movie.
Oh, they should. They should, because Rogue One's fantastic. It's I love great. Rogue One.
It's
so good.
Great.
So good.
You get out of here. You think it's not a good movie? You get out of here. You take your announcer voices and you get out of here.
The thing I love about Rogue One is it really explored how you can tell different kinds of stories in this universe. Because It's clearly the Dirty Dozen. It's clearly a war movie.
Obviously. But it works so well. No, it was new yet familiar. It was great.
So good. Well, since you love it, you should know the answer to this.
How dare you?
Was the Empire removing A, kyber crystals, B, sacred texts, C, Jedi holocrons, or D, the last Starbucks in the galaxy?
I think it was the Jedi holocrons, no?
Really? No, they were removing kyber crystals. Kyber crystals to power the laser on the Death Star. And it was the crystals the Jedi use in the lightsabers.
Yeah. No, that makes sense because that's what happened.
True.
You
know, that's why it makes sense. It's what
happened. You used to watch like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? And they're like, I should have gone with my gut.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all the time.
Now, that's not what I'm experiencing right now.
No.
No, I'm kidding. No, it is. That was my gut. And I said, no, you shut up, gut. You don't even go here.
Now, I got two questions left. And
are you going to have a career after this?
You need to get this next one. If you don't get this next one right, I'm probably going to have to do some crazy editing because you need to know this one.
Okay, great. Well, let's just count on the editing.
In The Force Awakens, what does Poe Dameron tell Finn he can keep because it suits him?
It's his jacket. Moving on.
Yes, his jacket. Thank you.
Come on.
Thank you. You don't even get to hear my funny D answer.
Oh,
now.
Sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead. Let's listen.
I was going to say his Rebellion ID badge and punch card, two more punches, and he'll earn a free big gulp of blue milk.
That's fantastic.
Thank you. I was really proud of writing that.
That's actually in the outtakes.
Yeah. Yes. The punch card for blue milk.
Yeah. That was the, they got an alt. They got an alt for that. They're like, you know what? Just in case Jacket doesn't play, let's do the punch card.
All right. Last one. Last question. Here we go. This is a tough one, but maybe you'll know it. We'll see.
George Lucas.
How? Wow. That was amazing.
I don't want to brag or anything.
In creating the new trilogy, J.J. Abrams came up with the name Poe Dameron from what two sources? Poe Dameron is named after two things. What are the two things?
Edgar Allan Poe.
Crazy difficult, I know.
Sorry. Teletubbies.
But which color?
The Poe was the red one.
Oh, nice.
Which
nice.
Is why there's red in the movie. And Dameron, as everybody knows, I can't believe I even have to explain this to anybody, was that they were looking at cutting off a body of water, and they couldn't decide if they should go on it or in it. So they were like, we got a dam. We're in? I don't know. You tell me. Dad punch.
Can I hit this sound multiple times? That was dad terrible.
Dad punch.
Well, so that you know, maybe it'll affect your performance in one of your many future jobs as Poe Dameron, which I'm assuming you will still get after this performance.
Who knows?
Dameron was the last name of his assistant, and Poe was the name of his daughter's teddy bear.
Named after the Nellentum.
It was short for polar. Sweet. His daughter's teddy bear was a polar bear, and so it was Poe.
That's actually very sweet.
Yeah, I like that a lot. It's adorable. You're a teddy bear. But I also promised
to do sound effects if I didn't know something, so Bauga! I.
Don't worry, I'm going to use lots of processing to make this sound like you were brilliant throughout that whole thing.
Honey,
Jake, before I let you go, any last words of advice for any voice actors out there looking to get into the business?
If you want to do it, it's very fun. I recommend it.
give it a try. It's better than accounting.
Yeah. If you've never acted before, get into an acting class. If you have acted before, start reading things out loud. Like even a magazine ad is a commercial. Try it. Just train and believe in yourself and don't be a jerk.
You're like a walking motivational poster. That was amazing.
You can do
it. I'm just going to see you with a black border around you and like the picture of an eagle. That's who you are to me now.
Oh, did you not see? Sorry, hold on. Do you see it? I had it back there the whole fantastic. Time. I had a sheet covering it.
That's fantastic. Hang in there, baby. Wow. That Hang is original. Yep.
Didn't want to have to bring it out.
Thank you so much for being on the podcast with me. And for those of you listening at home, Lego Star Wars Terrifying Tales premieres this Friday, October 1st on Disney Plus. And now I'm going to leave with the same words that my mother would give me every Saturday morning when the cartoons were done. The show's over. Go outside and play.
That's fantastic.